Good evening. I'm Terry Thornton. I'm Curator of Education. It's my great pleasure to welcome you to Tuesday Evenings at the Modern. Tuesday Evenings is an ongoing series here at the Modern. We will run this spring through, I think it's April 27th, but check me on that, see if that's actually a Tuesday. Next week we have Cabinet Magazine, a representative from Cabinet Magazine, Pastelogram, and Triple Canopy here to discuss the vibrant life and perceived challenges of today's art publications. We all know the nature of art writing and then the nature of trying to decide whether that's an online or a print endeavor. This is sure to be a lively and productive conversation that touches on the most contemporary and real issues of communication and art, as well as what is the broader culture that art engenders and shares. This is an extremely timely presentation, as I see it, since more and more creative thinkers are taking matters into their own hands and starting pop-up galleries, zines, blogs, and other collaborative efforts. So I invite you back next week and suggest that you come early to visit the galleries or just to go to the cafe and have dinner or drinks. I've been asked to tell you that as an incentive for you to come to our beautiful cafe and experience that before the Tuesday evenings, they are offering a very good deal on bottles of wine, on select bottles of wine. It's 30% off, so there's my advertisement, but it's actually a very worthwhile advertisement. They're so sweet to stay open to accommodate us. I'm not sure they make a dime, but they're sweet to do it. Tonight, I'm happy to introduce an artist who, while internationally recognized, is thought of in Texas as one of our very own. Trenton Doyle Hancock lives and works in Houston after growing up in Paris, Texas, and receiving a BFA from East Texas State in Commerce. Before completing his MFA at the Tyler School of Art of Temple University in Philadelphia, his work was chosen for the 2000 Whitney Biennial, which was the biennial that our own museum's chief curator, Michael Opping, was one of five curators for. That following year, the Modern was fortunate to be included as a venue for the life and death of number one, which began at the CAM in Houston and ended what is now Art House in Austin. The Modern is proud to own nine of the buy-and-buy portfolios of etchings and the impressive large-scale mixed-media work, and the branches become as storm clouds from 2003, which you can see on the second floor in the galleries of this museum now. Trent is well represented in the DFW Metroplex with his work handled by Tally Dunn Gallery in Dallas. His is one of, I have to say, the most spectacular pieces in the very impressive Cowboys Stadium collection. And his work was included in Out of Commerce that just closed at the MAC in Dallas. Some of you may have had an opportunity to see that. Trent's exhibition record spans the globe, including solo exhibitions, Trenton Doyle Hancock, The Wayward Thinker, which was organized by Fiona Bradley at the Fruit Market Gallery in Edinburgh, Scotland, in 2007. Wow, That's Mean, and Other Vegan Cuisine at the ICA in Philadelphia in 2008. Trenton Doyle Hancock, We Done All We Could, and None of It Was Good. And None of It's Good. These are supposed to rhyme, and I'm really wrecking them there. which was organized by the University of Florida Art Museum. And then a new body of work that I had the good fortune of seeing this past fall at the James Cohen Gallery, where Trent's work is represented in New York, titled And Then It All Came Back to Me, which I think is something that Trent might touch on in tonight's presentation. Trent's work has also been chosen for many, many biennials. I was kind of amazed. I think one every year for most of his life now. Those include, in addition to the 2000 Whitney Biennial that I mentioned, also the 2002 Whitney Biennial, as well as the 2000 Animix Biennial, in 2009-2010 at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Shanghai, China, the 2009 International Icheon Women's Artist Biennial in South Korea, the 2008 Prospect 1 in New Orleans, and in 2003 the Istanbul Biennial Poetic Justice at the Istanbul Foundation for Culture and Arts, and the Lyon Biennial in France, and I'm not sure what year that was. I think, in fact, he's done a couple of those biennials in Lyon. In 2008, Trent parlayed into the world of dance with Cult of Color, Call to Color, a collaboration with composer Graham Reynolds and choreographer Stephen Mills for the Ballet Austin, which received great acclaim, critical acclaim, with Eleanor Hartney of Art in America calling it an exuberant mix that swept the viewer along in a satisfying blend of sound, imagery, and movement. And the ballet was actually brought back just a couple of weeks ago for the fifth anniversary, so that has just closed in Austin. Trent recently received the Greenfield Prize at the Hermitage Artist Retreat in Elwood, Florida, and has also been acknowledged with the 2012 Houston Fine Arts Fair Artist of the Year in Houston, the 2007 Joyce Alexander Wayne Award from the Studio Museum in Harlem, the S.J. Wallace Truman Fund Prize in the 181st Annual Exhibition at the National Academy Museum in New York in 2006. Tonight he is here to share with us this new direction in his work as he presents in preparation of the Bring Back. Please join me in welcoming Trenton Doyle Hancock.
Wow. Thank you, Terry, for that introduction. It's good to be back here. My home away from home, Fort Worth Modern Museum. I'm going to be showing you guys a lot of images, and I'm going to be talking a lot. So might as well get going with this. This first thing that I have projected up here is... Yeah, I guess if the lights come down as far as possible, it'd be awesome. I usually start these things out with this image, and this is from one of my favorite movies, Superman, the movie from 1978, starring Christopher Reeve and Marlon Brando. I start out with this film because it's been my favorite movie since it came out. I've probably seen it probably 1,000 times, but it's meant different things to me over the years. Here lately, I've focused in on the idea of the artist or the blessing of the space as the artist, as one as for us, the superhero, or you have these things that you can do that maybe others can't do, and with that comes an obligation and responsibilities to change and to risk and sacrifice. And there's a point in that film where a young Clark Kent is receiving this knowledge for the first time. He's grown up to the age 18, and he's very confused about who he is. And he meets his birth father for the first time, who's played by Marlon Brando. And the scene takes place in the Fortress of Solitude. So what I'm going to do is just quote to you their exchange, because to me it's this very special and crystallizing, no pun intended, moment in this structure. "My son, you do not remember me. I am Jor-El. I am your father. By now you will have reached your 18th year as it is measured on Earth. By that reckoning, I will have been dead for many thousands of your years. The knowledge I have matters physical and historic. I have given you fully on your voyage to your new home. These are important matters to be sure of, but still matters of mere fact. There are many questions to be asked, and it is now time for you to do so. Here in this fortress of solitude, we shall try to find the answers together. So, my son, speak. Who am I? Your name is Kal-El. You are the only survivor of the planet Krypton, and even though you've been raised as a human, you're not one of them. You have great powers, only some of which you have as yet discovered. Come with me now, my son, as we break the bonds of your earthly confinement, traveling through time and space. So this first image is titled Frosty, and I made this in 1996. I was an undergraduate, and I was just starting on this introspective search, digging within myself, trying to find something that was familiar, something that I could call my own. So what I did was I turned to the mirror, and I made a painting of myself, very straightforwardly, on paper. And it looked like me, but it really didn't feel like me. So I went to my grandmother's garage, and I found this old mildewed green tarp. I took that and printed on top of it and glued the painting to it. And then it started to feel a bit more like me, but it wasn't enough. So I took a sander and I started to sand into the surface. And as I was eroding away those layers, what I was doing was unearthing something that seemed familiar. And then I took my paint and I painted over the top of all of that. And then and only then, after there was this kind of a history to the material, something that had been, I guess, encased in it, that I feel like I unlocked. So it was the fusing of my image versus what was inherently in these materials that then made something that I think felt like me. Thus starting my relationship to collage and this idea of layering a surface, tearing away at that, and then layering some more, tearing away, so on and so forth, until something feels historic about it. I'm going to talk a little bit about what performance means to me. This is an image from my first one-person show in a gallery. This was at Gerald Peters Gallery in Dallas in 1998. People came to the gallery. They were expecting to see an artist holding a wine glass, wearing a suit. And what they saw before them was something very unfamiliar. There was this wall, this heap, this mound of sorts, snoring. And they thought, what is happening? Well, every 30 minutes, an alarm clock would go off, and the gallery director, Mrs. Tally Dunn, would come in, flip on the lights, turn off the alarm clock, climb a ladder with a bowl of Jell-O, and begin to feed me. The assistant director, Lisa Brown, was underneath the armature, and she was blowing up balloons that corresponded to the color of Jell-O that I had just eaten. There were four different feedings, four different colors of balloons, and she would shove those balloons out the butthole of the creature, ending up on the floor, so there was balloon shit everywhere at the end of the night. And this is the residue of this performance. So what's left over, I felt very comfortable calling sculpture. I'm not trained as a sculptor, but I feel that I can have this meaningful relationship to it as the residue of these gestures or these performances. The things on the walls are plastic tops, which I had been collecting for about a year at that point. But those harken back to when I was younger, and I would collect plastic tops from around the house. When I was 2-3 years old, I would crawl around open all the cabinets and unscrew all of the detergents and cleansers and play with these plastic tops because they were the same size as my toys, the same shapes and colors and material as the toys. So I doubled my toy collection by doing this. But to me, they represented a kind of truth. And so in this moment, when I was an undergraduate looking for these tropes, these ideas, these icons that I felt a closeness to, because it was a very inundating thing to say, oh, the world is before you. You can take all of that stuff and turn it into art. Go. And it's just too much. So I had to look to my own past. And that narrowed it down a whole lot for me. Because here are these things that already have meaning. I can take them and try and understand them better. So these plastic tops got co-opted into the practice and became maybe my entry point into abstraction. This is a piece that was hanging in that show. And I thought, maybe this is what these mound creatures, how they think. Maybe they think in color. So this was almost like a sentence. The thing trying to say something to people, articulate something that was just about form and shape. This is the first mound that I believe I made with the this material, the fake fur and the felt. This is a piece called Coon Wound. This is the first mound that I made on canvas. This is the Beaver. He's a malformed mound. The title of this is, And Then I Saw Her Face, Now I'm a Beaver. This is an egromaniac five times fast. Coon Bear the Legend, Jr. Now I'll talk a little bit about veganism. When I was in graduate school in Philadelphia, I had never met any vegans before. I'd hardly met any vegetarians. This was a foreign concept to me that you don't have anything around you made out of animals and nothing goes inside of you that is animal. I thought, this is weird, but I was interested in learning about it. I was roommates with a couple of vegans, this husband and wife. And after a while, they became very preachy. It was hard to live with them. And I won't get into the details, but one of them started running a porno site out of the bedroom. So they had one, it was a webcam, and they had one customer. It's like, so they were very loyal to them. Anyway. This got to be a bit much, so I didn't know any way to get back at them except to draw horrible pictures of them, so that's exactly what I did. It made me feel a lot better. So here I am at the dinner table eating vegans for dinner. This is a piece called Salad. So when vegans get together, that grouping is called a salad. So I continued to draw these forms, these vegan forms, and the more I did, the more I stripped away their humanity. They became more insect-like, more alien-like, or goblin-esque, and they had bones protruding from places that just bones shouldn't be, and they became actually a lot more fun to draw, and they became like further away from the source material. So I was no longer thinking about my roommates. I was thinking about how to get to new ways of building a picture. So they became building blocks that I could just put away for when I needed them. Oh, and I don't know how that got in there. But this is Torpedo Boy. So when I was in about the fourth grade, I had just gotten glasses, and I wasn't feeling very good about myself. My self-esteem was really low, and what I did was I retreated to the picture plane. I started drawing these pictures of this superhero, so I became Torpedo Boy, and I would write stories about him, and he was this archetypal superhero. He'd always show up and save the day on time. He was super strong. he was my version of Superman. So it actually gave me a lot more confidence as I continued to draw that character. So when I got older, I brought Torpedo Boy back, and when he traversed that span of time, he took on some very adult qualities, I would say. He just became a lot more flawed. And that was also fun to exploit and to try and figure out. It's like, what is the relationship to the ego, to the artist, to the superhero, to this idea of strength and obligation, all boiled up into this one character. This was just a fun exercise. This is a piece called Leave Salem and Torpedo Boy stepping on someone's face. This is Torpedo Boy kills shoplifters, so don't shoplift. This is part of a 10-drawing series where I actually flipped the script. Instead of Torpedo Boy being the hero, he became sort of the antagonist in this story, where he goes into the underworld and the vegans are having their sacred meal, which is tofu. And he swipes all of their tofu away from them and ducks into an alleyway to count his new booty stash, and out of the corner of his eye he sees a beautiful prostitute named Trudy Fluso. So he approaches Trudy and offers her 2 blocks of tofu for her services, and she agrees. I won't get into what happens next, but it's crazy. This is the first mound meat that I ever painted, and this was from grad school. It's 6 by 9 feet, and it's called Wow, That's Me. And it's based on a small drawing I did of a little mound, and it's basically the same image except his head is inset in a little circle off to the side. And I think I was thinking about those old Wheel of Fortune shows where you'd win some money and then you'd go through this, your head would be inset and you'd go through a fake living room and buy things. I really kind of like that composition, so I think I gave you too much. But anyway, it gave birth to this painting. And this was one of the first canvas paintings that I carved into. So all the words, Wow, That's Me, are carved over and over into the surface. And then the letters that are carved out are then glued back on top. So there was this kind of push and pull, a little give and take of the surface that I was excited about. And then I responded to that with paint and other material. So I started to really establish and finesse this idea of, you know, painting and sculpture, and where does one end and another begin? But there's always this kind of obligation to the picture plane. But this was, I think, one of the first successful attempts at capturing this tense moment in between the two ideas. So anyway, after that, I continued, almost as if with the vegan idea, continued to make these mound meat paintings as a way to explore different compositional opportunities.